Ahoy, ahoy! Welcome to the Real Jaws Minute. I'm Tyson Ferris.
I'm Jeremy Sternhagen.
And this is part three of our Piranha analysis. Apparently really taking our time here.
Yeah.
But hey, you know what?
People paid their money to listen to us talk about Piranha.
Yeah.
And so we're going to give you your money's worth.
There you go. Also, so as much as you might want to, you can't just bury a body. Like, that's not a thing you can do.
Oh, because they bury...
He's like, oh, I wouldn't want to be buried in town. I'll go get a shovel.
That's pretty much an afternoon. And there's not much... isn't it... Is there even a nighttime scene between here and the end of the movie?
I don't think so.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, oh, no, there is. There is.
Is there?
There is one nighttime because they're in the army camp.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, okay. But yeah, burying a body, that's a better part of your afternoon.
Yes.
Yeah. Not because I've buried a body, but because I've dug a hole. I know how long it takes.
Yeah.
It's a long time.
It must have been a shallow grave.
very.
Very, very shallow. Anyway, I just thought that was a weird thing. Anyway, like, not necessary. Like, it was just like,
well,
yeah.
I think they should have just left it with like, let's keep going. We got to notify the
authorities. And we'll notify the authorities. We're not going to help him now, yeah. You know?
Sorry, but put a blanket on him.
Yeah. Anyway, it was just weird to me. I get it. They're trying to kind of, they're these kind of loner characters anyway. And he's upset that his buddy, his like only buddy is gone. And
understandable.
Yeah. And in a really nasty way. So then you get, I'm just going to keep calling her little girl Grogan because I don't know her name.
The daughter?
Yeah.
She's a bit of an underdeveloped character in this movie.
That I think is true, but also I think the actress does a great job.
Mm-hmm.
Like
the young girl?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. She's great. Yeah.
She's great. I get what she actually does a lot of acting without any words. And I always know what she's thinking and it's not over the top. It's all very understated.
Right.
I really like her performance a lot. Apparently she was not a real actress. She was just a local hire. And
yeah. She worked out.
She did a great job. Anyway. I'm going to point this out. There's her talking with, the other camp counselor, the brunette this time. Basically, we have a brunette counselor and we have a blonde counselor.
Belinda Bulaski.
Okay,
there you go. I looked her up.
Anyway, there's a period joke here.
Mm-hmm.
While they're throwing darts.
Okay.
She's like, oh, we could just tell him. Oh, nope, you're too young. She's like, what? Anyway.
Remind me.
Of why she can't go swimming.
Oh, a period joke.
like a women's menses, Jeremy.
I thought you were referring to like a period drama, period costume. Like, I don't remember that. Yes, I do remember that.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about you know, panty liners, tampons, that sort of period joke.
Ah, yes. Yeah. So that actress Belinda Bulaski makes an appearance. She's in The Howling, mm-hmm. and she is in Gremlins, and she is in Gremlins 2. And she's in Matinee, and she's in Small Soldiers.
Holy,
she's in a lot of crap. Joe Dante movies. I think Joe Dante, he reuses a lot of his actors.
Oh, yeah, he's got a stable actors, for sure.
You said you don't know Gremlins that well?
I just haven't seen it in years.
Okay. There's a scene early in Gremlins where...
And I've never seen Gremlins 2.
Oh, wow. Holy cow. This is a problem. Are you aware? Okay, so I've seen Gremlins 2. I saw it in the theater. I've probably.
I don't want to go down a Gremlins thing. Let's keep going on this.
You're telling me to stop? Oh my goodness. If you want to see Joe Dante, just everything.
I've and heard the kitchen I really sink, I really need to see Gremlins 2 a new
bit. It is Joe Dante run amok. Yeah. And I mean that in a good way.
Yeah.
That's all. Okay. So anyway, Belinda Bulaski.
It's just one of those ones I've just never watched.
It's not that you have to, but it's definitely a curiosity. It's just, it's crazy.
I've heard you can tell he had carte blanche and used it like
in a good way.
Yeah.
It is like, it's fun. It's a blast.
But maybe to a detriment to his career. Because I don't think he got.
There's a
I think he kind of got...
I want to say he followed that up with Matinee, which is like a hard...
Which is not a good thing to... If you've already kind of made people mad with Gremlins 2, you probably should not follow it up with Matinee, which is like...
Hold on. Hey, watch it. What are you going to say?
I love Matinee.
I do too. Okay.
Good. I love Matinee. Matinee's great, but from a...
Zero commercial... Who is that movie for? Zero commercial...
It has zero commercial value. It's like...
It's for six people on the planet, and you and I are two of them.
Two of them, yeah.
Yeah.
And it has less commercial appeal than like Ed Wood.
It's almost a
prototype. Ed Wood has zero commercial appeal. Like, who wants a movie about Ed Wood?
But it's a critical darling. And
Matinee is a great film. I'm just saying, you can't go carte blanche Gremlins 2 that like everybody kind of was like, what the f*** is that? And then you go do Matinee, which is for no one. And then, I mean, I think his career after that kind of petered a bit.
He kind of got relegated to like kind of a cookie cutter.
Yeah.
Sorry, Joe, if you're listening. I love you.
Yeah.
But he kind of got...
Also, by the way, go check out The Movies That Made Us. It is an awesome podcast.
The Movies That Made Me, yes.
Movies That Made Me, yes.
Fantastic pod. It's Joe Dante's Trailers From Hell podcast. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's so
I mean this as a compliment. Joe Dante's career post-Gremlins, post-Matinee, he kind of became a director for hire, where it's like, they're like, oh, this movie fits a formula. And Joe Dante is kind of that formula, so we'll just make him direct it.
Also, I think in that era, I think he got into TV with like Erie, Indiana.
Yeah, and that sort he of did. Thing. Yeah, and all the.
Which, by the way, Erie, Indiana is a freaking nuts TV show. That's just awesome.
I remember as a 12, 13-year-old trying to watch it and realizing that it was too smart for me. Does that sound right? Like I watched it, going like, I know this is good. I don't get it.
Yeah.
So it's either bad or it was too good for.
Oh, like, no. It's really, really
okay,
good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've actually gone back and watched it. It's fantastic.
So anyway, I was just going to say real quick, Belinda Blasky, she's in Gremlins and she is the mom. They go into the bank to try to get a loan from Zach Galligan, the Billy.
Okay.
And they get denied by Mrs. Deagle because they're poor.
Mm-hmm.
And then later Mrs. Deagle gets killed by the Gremlins.
Sure.
So, anyway. I definitely watched this movie.
The camp counselor is Mrs. Deagle?
No, she's the mother of she's the poor mother who won't get a money. Okay,
gotcha.
Mrs. Deagle at the bank won't extend their credit or something.
Okay,
anyway,
gotcha.
I just remember watching this movie again 2 days ago going like, oh, I know her. Anyway, sorry, I had to throw it in.
Yeah.
She's a Joe Dante regular.
Cool.
That was quite a tangent.
Yes.
I'm having fun. I try to self-edit, but come on.
Don't. That's my job later.
Okay. I'm just going to go hog wild. No. You decide what's worth leaving in.
Yeah. So anyway, I mentioned, now that we're back from that. So the period joke, I'm mentioning that now because I think it gets brought up later.
That's why the piranha came to the campsite. Right?
No, it's not like...
Oh, okay.
I mean, there's that Anchorman joke. Just bears, you see? You put the whole station in danger.
Smell the menstruation.
Anyway, I just wanted to throw it out because I'm going to make a reference to it later. Anyway, so then we cut to this dad and son scene that just seems a bit out of nowhere.
I have two questions. I have two things to say about it. One, why can't he pull his arm out?
He's trying to get a net that has been caught at the bottom of the river.
But once he gets bitten, what's holding his arm down?
They are so tenacious that he cannot pull his arm out.
Okay. That's the answer, and I'm just got to go with it.
Yeah. It does not make sense. It means, like, first bite, I'd be like, pull your arm out. Like, and I have a bite in my arm now.
Yeah. Ow.
Yeah.
So that brings up a bigger point. Like, the piranha attack and what happens as a result, like, it changes throughout the movie. Because at the end of the movie, people are just like running out of the water.
Yeah.
Because they get bitten.
I don't.
And they come out with like a little nip and a scratch here. And like in a minute here, Kevin McCarthy is just going to get, you know, nipped and scratched, and you know, he's going to get death by a thousand paper cuts here in a minute. But this guy, you know, just elbow deep in the waters enough to,
and then he gets pulled in.
He gets pulled in.
It capsizes a canoe.
Yeah,
which I don't know if you've tried to capsize a canoe. It is not easy.
Movies make it look like it's the most easy thing in the world.
It's actually really it's hard to do.
Yeah, they're heavy.
They're really heavy.
A real canoe is heavy.
They're really heavy, and they have that really narrow bottom point, which means it's really hard to flip them.
Yeah.
Also, once they're upside down, they don't just randomly sink.
Nope. No, they would.
They would float there forever, literally.
Yeah, because they say that, and isn't it like, we got to get to the boat before it sinks? Like, are the piranhas eating the canoe? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It is a fitting.
A lot of paddle boats float just as good upside down as they do right side up.
Yeah.
Yeah, this dad and seen son, if I had to nitpick, I get that it's been a while since we've had a piranha deck.
My memory is the commentary calls it out as like,
and now we need a piranha deck.
It's been too long since we've had a piranha attack. So, yeah.
I do like the 7-Eleven cooler in the boat.
Yeah.
And it says, "Oh, thank heaven" on it. Which I forgot that was.
Oh, man.
And that just took me back. I forgot. I was like, oh, yeah, 7-Eleven had that as a.
Yep.
I don't know if 7-Elevens are all over the country, but they are a.
They're all over Oregon.
Yeah, they're all over Oregon.
So. Yeah. Yeah, there was one that I remember in Montana. They're not like, there's like one per city.
It's a chain,
it's a convenience store.
Convenience store.
Yeah. Some of them are gas stations.
Yeah.
Some of them weren't.
So, yeah. So now we go. We're back to Kevin McCarthy, and he starts finally giving us some info.
Yeah.
Seemingly what? Out of nowhere and for no reason.
Right before they get to the kid on the canoe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He just starts spilling his guts.
Well, because he's.
Why about, now? I have no idea.
Because he's about to die.
Yeah. So. I love that these were developed to win the Vietnam World War.
Yes.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, I like that story angle. It gives little forethought to once you've won the Vietnam War, then what? You've got this region infested with piranhas. But yeah.
Well, and it's funny to note, you know, piranha actually in the United States, and they're illegal in a lot of states because if there's this thought that if they enter the waterways, they will become an invasive species, which just isn't true because they are a tropical fish.
And they can't survive anywhere in North America.
And our waters are just too damn cold for them to survive. But I was like, that means we have laws on the books that are because of piranha.
Yeah.
Not piranha the fish, piranha the movie, that they think that somehow this will be an invasive species.
I
just think time and time again, we're showing that what these fish actually are and the way they're portrayed are just not even the same thing.
I don't think anybody knew anything about piranha until this movie came out, and everyone is just attributing everything. Like, this movie introduced most of the popular culture presuppositions about piranha into the cultural zeitgeist.
Well, it was Teddy Roosevelt and then this movie.
Yep.
there are some piranha films out there before this film.
Oh yeah, there's one there. I know there was one in the earlier 70s and it's terrible. I actually looked a little bit at YouTube about it. What was I going to say? Oh, I think in my Googling for piranha, I even found like almost every state, including Oregon, has stories of like people angling in a river and pulling a piranha out. And everyone's like, oh no, we got piranha. But every scientist says the same thing. Like, no, that piranha just got dumped in there. Someone probably had a pet piranha and threw it away. And the piranha in a matter of days, like, it, out of desperation, ate the first thing it could find, which happened to be a lure, and now it's dead.
Yeah,
because every scientist says the same thing: like, yeah, it's gonna die.
Yeah,
it can't reproduce. Like, how's it gonna?
Well, one, it needs another piranha to reproduce with.
Yeah,
and two, Also, piranha. It should be noted, piranha are a prey fish. Mm-hmm. Like, they are preyed upon. They do not prey upon other things. Like,
yeah. And in, they're, and in, like, South America, they get eaten. Yeah. Like, they're a delicacy.
Oh, no. Yeah. You, the people just straight up eat them. Yeah. They're, I've heard they're quite tasty. They're bony, but very tasty.
I never looked at my piranha and thought I wanted to eat them. My piranha, FYI, they all died because they grew so big in my 15-gallon tank that they started killing each other. Mm. Yep. So the problem with piranha is eventually they grow. That's why everybody gets rid of them. Like, you got to, bigger tanks.
Wow.
And yeah, I didn't think about that as a teenager when I got them. So if you want to know what a bad fish is, an Oscar fish. Oh, and I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. Oscars. Yeah. My understanding of Oscars is they're even gnarlier than, way gnarlier than piranhas.
Yeah. And yeah. They are, like, they're aggressive towards humans.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not in a, like, strip the meat off your bones way, but they're just like, oh, I'm going to just come take a chunk out of you.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to this movie.
I think they're related, actually.
They are. Same kind of, yeah. They look like big, fatter, grosser, scarier piranhas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're like lumpy piranhas.
Yep.
Yeah. They're like piranhas on steroids is what they look like. Yeah. So,
we get Kevin McCarthy gets killed.
Yeah, he just
saving a boy.
He just leaps into the water for no particular reason. And he goes, he has this, he's like, you think I'm responsible for this?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, dude,
yeah.
You're 100% responsible for this. Like, what are you talking about?
You knew you had a potential problem on your hands. You could have killed them all.
Like,
and you didn't.
Yeah, you try, or they tried to kill them all, and then you kept the freaks that survived, and like, and then kept going with them, and yeah, because they pulled the plug, it's like, oh yeah, they're culpable. Okay, sure, scientist man.
One thing we kind of skipped over when we got that science lab scene. Well, we did mention that the stop motion animation, like weird shark gremlin creature. That the original concept of that was that it was going to progressively through the movie, you would see it bigger and bigger. So just going back to his like fault as a scientist, like I really wish that would have been a joke through the movie that the piranha thing is just like a red herring.
Uh-huh.
And that really at the end of the movie, it's like, no, what he's unleashed is this like beast from 20,000 fathoms.
Uh-huh.
Like giant dinosaur that's going to destroy everything.
Well, my understanding is they were going to have it like keep popping up like it was like following them.
Yeah.
And it would keep popping up. And then like
every time it'd be a little bigger.
Yeah. And then at the very end, it'd be like, I don't know, a little bit bigger, like about the size of a turkey or something.
Yeah.
And then it gets just hit by the police car on the road.
Oh. That would have been good too.
It doesn't end up being anything. Like,
it would have been a little too on the nose to have the end of the movie have it be like 20 feet tall.
Yeah. But yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. So I don't know why he dives in. It doesn't make any sense.
Nope. Because the raft gets there about the same time.
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. He doesn't ostensibly help. I mean, he does help the kid, but he could have helped him just as much being on the raft.
Yep.
So this is where I think he is culpable, and I think he does feel culpable, even though he's not saying he is. Because
mm-hmm.
I think all of his actions, him not telling people, him not explaining things, him not doing anything, is, I think this is basically a suicide.
This is an easy way out.
It's just like, yeah. I think he knew those kids showed up. I think you warmed the water up for him.
What? back at the pool at the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, my piranha are a little hungry.
Yeah. I mean, I just think he's, I don't know. I think he's been, he's gotten just obsessed with these things. And then he's realized that now they're going to be this blight on humanity, and he has no way out. So
I think
that's why he dives in.
Yep. So. It's one of the,
and it can make him look like a hero at the end.
In the scheme,
he's not.
In the scheme of the whole movie, the scientist storyline, has a great foundation, but the execution could have been a little better about his through line. And if, you know, are you having him die because he's guilty? Or are you having him die a hero's death? It's a little murky.
It's very murky. The whole character is very murky. Yeah. And Kevin honestly does a great job with what he's got. But man, it's kind of a mess.
Yeah.
And I don't know if stuff was cut out. I mean, who knows? But anyway, it's nuts. Anyway, he gets eaten up and got brought back. It'd have been nice if they could have just had like a torso brought up, but I think that was a bit out of their budget.
Why do they dump him over the side?
They've pulled him up on the boat.
Mm-hmm.
He dies.
Yes.
And then they continue to go down the river.
Mm-hmm.
And they start unlashing the boat
because Kevin McCarthy's
bloody
body is
up there
getting the piranhas all worked up.
Oh yeah, they're all Twitter pated.
Give me a second. Sword in the Stone.
Is that from
Sword in the Stone, the Disney movie? Is they Twitter pated is the word for?
I have all kinds of grandpa.
Oh man, I think that's Sword in the Stone. We'll find out later. Let's not find out right now.
Yeah. Anyway,
if you're wrong, just join the Facebook group and tell us.
Yeah. Piranhas start doing the unlashing. This will come in later again. This is really great. This is all done with editing. This is just all kind of tight shots.
The piranha destroying the raft.
Destroying the raft.
Yeah.
It's very just piecemealed together just through editing.
And it's the best look you get at the piranha in, like, you don't see the piranha until now. And now you get just a bunch of quick cut shots of them annihilating the boat.
And it's really good. It's effective.
It's showing what they can do. And it's, you know, not a minute too late as we head into halfway point of the movie,
mm-hmm.
showing like, oh, now I can see, like, if you're going to show the piranha doing this now, we know we're going to see them a lot in the rest of the movie. And we correct. Are. Yep.
This is basically our, shark on the side pond shot.
Yep.
Is
Bruce eating the estuary victim guy.
Correct. Like
about halfway through the movie, it's about time to show your villain.
Yep. Yep.
Yep.
So, so once again, taking a page out of Jaws. Yep. And then I have in all caps in my notes, here come the military.
Are we there yet?
Are we? Wait. We got it. We got to dump the body, right?
So they dump the body.
Dump the body. It gets ate up.
Then they talk about running to the dam to stop opening the dam.
Oh, I guess he does run to the dam. Yep. Stops it. Yeah.
Actually, kind of a suspenseful scene.
Kind of suspenseful. He does get there in time.
And then right after that, there's the military.
There's like Barney Fife dam operator.
Yeah.
Like, Yeah.
Anyway. I think that's the second time you've mentioned Barney Fife in this podcast.
At least in season two.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you don't remember what I mentioned it before.
I don't know. I just remember I had to, like, in our effort to explain our deep cut not social.
I love that Barney Fife is a deep cut. That makes me sad.
Well, for most listeners today, it might be.
Yeah, it could be. Anyway. So
here comes the military.
Here come the military.
Might be the most expensive shot in this whole movie.
Yeah.
To get, you know, our five or six big military rigs rolling into shot here.
Totally.
We get a couple big character introductions here.
Yeah, we got the colonel and I like to refer to her as Lady Scientist.
Oh, Barbara Steele.
Yeah. She's great.
Yeah. Do you know her background?
I do not.
She is a Roger Corman staple. She was in... I don't have it in front of me, but she's in a bunch of the 60s era Cormans. I think the Edgar Allan Poe, some of the Edgar Allan Poe things she did. Anyway, she's no stranger to Roger Corman Productions.
Awesome.
And she is also a genre classic for her horror and sci-fi stuff.
Yeah. So. Well, she's fantastic.
Yeah.
She has almost this, almost a femme fatale quality about her.
That's kind of the part she would play in those other movies in her younger days. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, she's, I think we hit on this earlier, but I have The Colonel is a bit broad for my taste. He's fine. So then we have a lot of stuff where they're basically going, we're the military. And like, you got to listen to us. And like, yeah. We're the military, but you got to listen to us. And basically mm-hmm. we have that for like the next, I don't know, 5 or 6 minutes. From and then basically they go, okay, well, you guys aren't listening to us. So we're just going to lock you in this tent and not let you leave.
Yeah. From here to the end of the movie, minus the prison stuff, is all kind of like, okay, we've set everything up. Now let's pay it all off.
Yeah.
But then you've got this. This is literally the halfway point.
Basically,
there are
people trying to save the day and the people trying to get mm-hmm. this.
It's no longer like a mystery whodunit.
Whatever. We know who done it.
Like everything is out in the open. Mm-hmm. Everybody's motives are revealed.
But now it's like, it's the cover up people versus the non cover up people.
Yeah. It's the Vietnam analogy, sort of.
Sure. Yes. Yeah.
It has the movie.
It's the military industrial complex versus the, you could say they're the guerrillas in this.
Well, it's no mistake. I think that our heroes in this movie are like, regular Joe, like salt of the earth.
You'd say they're the Viet Cong.
Yeah. they're decidedly low tech. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, one thing I wanted to mention, I don't know where to bring it up except now, the general, he's not even a general, because there's a joke about that later that he's not a general.
He's a colonel.
The high ranking military guy who I would have cast in this role, who probably would have said no, but if I just, Darren McGavin.
Oh, he would have been great.
Right?
Yeah.
I swear, in my mind's eye going into this, I'm like, oh, yeah, isn't Darren McGavin in this movie?
That would have been fantastic. Yeah.
I thought he would have been.
Kochak is.
Yes, exactly, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. If I'm really dating my references, look up Kochak.
The Night Stalker. The
Night Stalker.
Yeah.
Oh, baby.
Most people know him as the dad from Christmas Story.
Dad from Christmas Story.
Yeah. Of our generation.
Fragile.
Do you know Italian. What your son said?
Must be Italian.
oh, man, that movie.
My dad painted in swear words the way Picasso would use oils.
Everybody is listening to this going, I love that movie, or what are they talking about?
Yeah. Well, luckily, there's one day a year where you can watch it. 12 times in 12 24 times. Hours.
Yep. TNT or TBS? I can't remember.
Yeah. So then we get this, they're locked up. Basically, they've decided, hey, we're not going to help you. We got to tell the people what's what. So they lock him up overnight. And by lock him up, I mean put him in a tent that's easily escapable.
They're put under guard.
They're put under guard.
Yeah.
And the guard, no other than John Sayles, the screenwriter.
Yep. Great movie making tactic. Have your writer on set.
Yeah. This has my favorite dialogue in the entire film is when they're in this tent.
Oh man, you'll have to refresh my memory.
It's my favorite dialogue of the entire film. And he goes, and I'm paraphrasing, but he's like, okay, you just got to distract him. Have him look away from the tent so I can get out. And she goes, she's like, okay, distract him. He goes, you know, he goes, use your, he's like, kind of like hit on him. He's like, use your, you know, feminine wiles, you know? And she goes, and she's like, oh, okay. And then she goes, what if he's gay? And he goes,
oh yes. Now, yeah.
He goes, then I'll distract him.
And then she goes out and she's like, are you gay? She wants to know right up front. It is funny now. I never put two and two together, but now I'm thinking about it. Of course, the writer wrote himself into the scene where his character gets flashed.
Yeah, gets flashed boobs. Yeah.
Although, according to Joe Dante, like that was a pickup shot later. So
it certainly is. It cuts away from her.
Oh, yeah.
So it's obviously not her boobs. It's someone else's boobs meant to look like her boobs.
But I totally, it's.
But, and then there's a Superman joke in here. She goes, look up in the sky. She goes, it's Superman. And she rips her shirt open like Superman.
And I have a theory on why that is. This movie would have been released at the height of Superman It wasn't quite out yet, but this movie would have come out right in the hype of Superman is coming out.
Isn't that a 78 movie as well?
It came out Christmas 78, right around when I was born.
Okay, so this is just before Superman.
Yep, this came out in August of 78.
Yeah, this is a late summer movie.
I do remember you and I talking
about... Whereas Jaws 2 was an early summer movie.
Yeah, you and I spent a little time on Jaws 2 talking about movies that came out right around when we were born. It is funny. So Jaws 2, Piranha,
yeah,
right back. These two basically opened against each other.
Yeah, they basically bookended the summer.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think Joe Dante comments in the commentary that this Jaws ripoff is late. Like it should have come out about 3 years earlier, but.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
That was relevant back then, but you know, for us viewing it 40 years later, it doesn't really matter when it came out.
Yeah, it really doesn't. Yeah. Then they make a call. He goes, oh God, we got to warn the camp. And they wake up, Mr. Dumont.
Mm-hmm.
And he's terrible as always. And, but actually, he has good reason here. And then they cut away, but they cut back to our Dillman and he goes, thinks I'm drunk. And I was like, dude, you're constantly drunk. Of course he thinks you're drunk. Like, why wouldn't he think you're drunk?
Yeah. Like, well, and then isn't there a line after that where it's like, well, can't we get in touch with your daughter some other way? And he's just like, no way. Like, my takeaway from this whole scene is like, that's his daughter is in mortal danger.
Yeah.
He's not trying that hard.
Yeah.
Like he called ahead. He got shot down pretty quick.
Yeah.
And why would a camp counselor fight that hard?
Can I talk to my daughter? No. It's like what?
Exactly. Like, why would you are a camp counselor. Why would a parent called saying,
but if this guy's a known drunk, he's calling in the middle of the night, right?
Yeah.
He's waking people up. I mean, if you're the counselor, like, can I talk to my daughter? And you think this guy's drunk. You're not going to go wake up a camper in the middle of the night.
Not because you genuinely don't want him to, but just like, yeah, I guess you're right.
I kind of get where he's coming from.
Yeah. Like I'm looking out for the interests of these kids. I'm not putting him on the phone with this kid on the phone with her drunk dad.
Dad at two in the morning. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah, it does. So,
I withdraw my earlier statement.
Yeah, it is. You can certainly see it both ways. Mm-hmm. So then they get picked up by the sheriff who's, I kind of just love, and
very like suddenly we're in like Smokey and the Bandit.
It's very Roscoe
P. Coltrane.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Like Roscoe, just but like slightly smarmier. Like
yeah,
not quite as. Gosh,
yeah, he's definitely not Sheriff Buford T. Justice. He's definitely more Roscoe P. Coltrane.
Yeah, definitely.
Or Boss Hogg.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he might be more Boss Hogg in like a Roscoe body.
Yeah.
And the sheriff's, the sheriff's probably right to hold these guys. They're in a military vehicle. They're not military. And then he goes and puts them in the Goonies jail, basically.
Oh, yeah. Same lighting, same color. Yeah. Thought the same thing.
And then.
Apparently, that's what every prison looked, little county jail looked like back then.
But yeah, just very, I've actually been to the Goonies jail and it very much reminded me of the Goonies jail. So a little roomier than the Goonies jail.
Yeah.
Anyway, the escape from said jail reminds me of the Goonies as well.
Is true.
There's like pipe involved.
And there's a Jeep. Wait, no, is there? No, there's no Jeep.
Yeah.
Wait, is there a Jeep? I can't remember.
Anyway, and then we get Dick Miller. Woo!
Wait, I just got a quick throw out because it's one of my notes. You get the campfire scary story scene.
Oh, yes. You
get the awesome moon, like the moon cameo, their fake moon.
Yes.
That's it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, Dick Miller, the real star of this movie.
Who is our Mayor Vaughn of this
film. Mayor Vaughn, yep, yeah. Totally.
Yeah. He's a buck something.
Yep. Yeah. And any big fan of both Joe Dante and Roger Corman will know that Dick Miller is like in every Roger Corman / Joe Dante movie. There, in fact, I haven't watched yet. There's a documentary called That Guy Dick Miller. I haven't seen it yet,
yeah,
but I want to. I think he recently passed away. Most of the cast of this movie has since passed.
Almost no one's alive in this film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mortality, folks.
The director is. That's about it.
Yep. Yep. Hopefully for a many more years, because his podcast, I don't want it to stop ever.
Yeah. Yeah. He is just a great kind of surrogate Vaughn character in this film, and just does a great job. So then we have a night scene. So back at the camp.
Where our two camp counselors have like 10,000 watt bulbs poured on them.
Poured on them. And then they're going to go swimming.
Mm-hmm.
So we have I really like this scene, because in any other film, these two girls go swimming at night and get eaten by piranhas.
Right? Yes. Oh yeah, totally. Yeah.
And I'm sure that's what's going to happen when we start this scene. And there's talking, like, she's like, oh no, it just feels weird. I don't know why, but it feels weird. And it's like, oh, come on. It'll be good for, yeah, you're probably right. And I was like, and now they take their clothes off and they go swimming because this is a Roger Corman movie.
Yep.
And this is what we all want. And this is what we all came here to see is boobies and them getting eaten by piranhas. It's
part of the Roger Corman recipe.
Yeah. So, and then you have Dumont comes in, and he basically boob blocks the scene. One of the girls is like, actually flashes a little bit.
Yep.
And is like gonna, and then
you get arguably one of the funniest scenes in the movie.
Yeah, and it's just
he may as well be delivering, Paul Bartel may as well be delivering his lines right into camera to all of the like teenage boys who are like, you thought you were going to see this, and now I'm just going to deliver all these lines.
Yeah. It's so fantastic. I just love how it's like playing with the audience. And it's like, you thought you were going to get boobs and carnage. Well, you get this big fat guy yelling at you. Ha ha. Anyway.
It's perfect.
It's great. It's, I just think it's funny as hell. And I even liked it better the second time.
It's almost like a scene that doesn't need to be in the movie.
It absolutely does not need to be in the film at all. But I like it in that it like circumvents expectation. Like,
yes. It's purely in there to be like, this is going to be funny.
It's like, oh, gotcha. Anyway, you thought this was going to happen. We just didn't give it to you. I really appreciate that. There's something to be said for a delayed gratification. They escape, them, the pants, getting thrown at the cop in his face. That's very satisfying. Then we're back at the camp. I think there's a lot of car chase and stuff, and he tries to kill him going around an RV, but we don't need to talk about that. Anyway,
I'm trying to remember all this stuff.
Anyway, so then we're back, the next
scene, you get a lot of your like smarmy Dick Miller scenes.
Yeah.
And then you're
back to the kids at the camp.
Yes.
And they're all shooting arrows, and he's like, oh, no, none of this, none of that, none of this. And it's swimming time, you know. And this kid comes up with an arrow through him, which is, and he's like, and he just looks at it, the kid just falls down dead.
I seriously thought,
and I remember for a the second, first, I was like,
that really happened.
Did that really happen? And then he's like, and then he like lifts up his shirt and like pulls it off. And he's like, that's not funny. And I'm like, no, that's legitimately funny. Like, that's very funny.
It is funny that some of the like lightest moments in this movie just precede the finale, where it gets pretty, it's grim and gruesome. And it's really easy for me as a viewer to be like, oh, this kid's in danger. I have that as a parent and a viewer. I'm always like,
I never once cared about these kids.
I know, right? Like, on one hand, like, I watch, like, I remember I've like watching the movie It, like,
the only kid I cared about in this film is the little girl.
Right.
And she never goes in the water. So,
right. Well, they show a bunch of like 10-year-olds, but then when the final massacre comes, it's all like, you know, teenagers and 20 somethings. But this scene,
well, there is the extended sequence where they just kill a bunch of kids at this camp. Like,
and that's actually, like, I feel like,
which we're getting there. We're getting there.
Yeah.
We're
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
We're almost there.
I don't know how to feel about
it. So anyway, so yeah. So he's like, now it's time for the swimming. We've been talking about this swimming competition that's coming. She won't go in the water and be part of the swimming competition, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, he's like, now here's where we separate, the tortoise, you know, the tortoises from the hares.
Yeah.
And the wheat from the shaft. And he's doing all this, you know, eloquent speech. And I was like, separate the tortoise from the hares. I go, the tortoise wins. He's making it sound like the hares win. But they don't. The tortoise wins. And then I thought about it. The little girl, Grogan, she's the tortoise. They're all hares.
Well, she wins.
They're all hares out there swimming. Right. And she's the tortoise that goes slow and low. And she ends up winning in the end.
It's almost like this movie has a really clever filmmakers and writers making it.
Yes. So I was like, what a neat little thing that happened there.
That's funny.
Something that I would not thought this film had.
Oh, and man.
I just loved it. Anyway.
I honestly, I'll say this if it's not obvious. When I rewatched this movie 2 days ago, I didn't necessarily expect my opinion to change of this movie. I thought I had it figured out in my head as like, it's a fun movie. It's pretty
cool. As we're going through it, are you liking it more?
More. Yes. This has elevated my opinion of it. Like, this movie is pretty clever.
It's great.
Yeah.
I really like it. Well,
We'll see you back here next week for Piranha.
Yeah, and check out the PayPal, check out the Facebook, give us a like and subscribe, and tell a friend. And we'll see you next time right here on The Real Jaws Minute.
Bye.
Bye.